WRFG Atlanta, your station for progressive information. And you are listening to Alternative Perspectives. And opinions expressed on WRFG do not necessarily represent the opinions of Radio Free Georgia Broadcasting Foundation, Inc., its staff, or volunteers.
You are listening to WRFG 89.3 FM, your station for progressive information, and this is Alternative Perspectives, produced by Betty Couvertier, and contributions by Andre Holmes, Dion Bates, Lakara Foster. Alternative Perspectives is the voice of the GLBTIQ community and our allies, the focus being the issues that affect the GLBTQ community, social, economic, religious, and political, to educate and inform about the lives of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, intersexed, queer, and questioning community, and to find the common humanity that connects all.
Good evening. You're listening to WRFG Atlanta's Alternative Perspectives. I'm Dion Bates. Tonight on Betty Talk, our guests include Imani Evans, founder and director of Women Healing Women. In Pride and Politics news, Andre Holmes will talk with Rudy Karn about a city representative's efforts to close Gerald's House, an agency providing assistance to HIV-positive African-American men. Diana Bagby will have our SOVO news, and This Way Out will provide national and international headlines. So, sit back, relax. Alternative Perspective starts right now.
You're on the air.
Hey, good evening.
Okay, how are you doing today?
I'm great, how are you?
You survived Pride?
I'm sorry?
You survived Pride?
I did,
Pride?
Yes. We all did, didn't we?
Yes, we did. All right.
Here are some headlines from Southern Voice newspaper. There was no sign of Georgia's severe drought on Sunday when, during the annual Atlanta Gay Pride Parade, severe thunderstorms passed right over the parade route, soaking thousands of people lining the streets as well as the marchers and floats participating. Attendance appeared down from last year, in large part due to the venue change as well as rain, said organizers. This year, the Pride event was moved to the Civic Center after the city banned large festivals from Piedmont Park due to the drought. Pride organizers set up petitions around the event seeking signatures to ask the city to return Pride to Piedmont Park next year. Also, no major injuries or arrests were reported. And while rain once again nearly washed out the Atlanta Pride Parade, the sun did come out again, and thousands of people flocked back to the Civic Center on the last day of the event to see closing act Tiffany, as well as the Starlight Cabaret show in the Civic Center auditorium. This year was the first time the Starlight Cabaret was held in an indoor venue, and organizers charged a small fee for people to attend. The Civic Center seats 4,500, and people were standing in a long line to purchase their tickets shortly before the show began. Preliminary estimates show that approximately 3,500 people packed into the Civic Center for the Starlight Cabaret. 100 couples participated in the annual Atlanta Pride Commitment Ceremony, proclaiming their love to each other in front of friends, family, and Pride watchers. While marriage between same-sex couples is not recognized legally in Georgia, couples receive certificates recognizing their commitment to each other. Hundreds more people participated in the annual Dyke March, and this year Pride was able to have the AIDS Memorial quilt on display the entire weekend inside the Civic Center. And in other news, Atlanta Police Department's LGBT liaison officer Darlene Harris shared the story of discovering being intersex earlier this year with a group of people gathered at a pre-Pride party held by City Council member H. Lamar Willis. Harris, who is comfortable with either the she or he pronoun, said sharing her story is important to educate as well as help others who may be facing the same struggles and questions. A complete wrap-up of Pride and Officer Harris's story will be in this Friday's Southern Voice. And those are the headlines.
All right.
Thank you, Betty. Thank you.
Yes.
Have a good evening.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. All right. And that was Diana from SOVO. And to add to some of the Pride news, we had, you know, before Pride actually took place, we all know that it was changed from Piedmont to the Civic Center for the first time, and that also the dates had changed from the last weekend in June to the July 4th weekend. And, you know, there was a lot of comments and, you know, people saying, well, you know, what's going to happen and is it going to happen and, you know, how are we going to make the adjustments? How is Pride going to pull it off? Well, we did. Okay, we pulled it off. It was awesome. It was grand. And it was an event that everybody, you know, after being there for a couple of days of coming back and forth and enjoying the events and just the atmosphere, the environment, there were a lot of emails received by Atlanta Pride. And I'm going to read just a couple of them. They say, we were amazed and impressed with what all you did to move Pride on short notice yet. Thank you for preserving Pride and for making our weekend great. I'm going to keep this anonymous because I didn't have time. I just received them this afternoon, and I didn't have time to check with the folks to see if they wanted it, you know, to be read. So I'm going to keep them anonymous. But the important thing is of what people thought and how they appreciated what the Atlanta Pride Festival Committee did to put it together. You guys did a great job today. We had a blast. Good job. Despite the rain, we look forward to seeing you in the community and participating next year. Another one. Absolutely great job with Pride 2008 at the Civic Center. My partner and I been going to Pride at Piedmont Park for many years, but we thoroughly enjoyed the Civic Center location. We preferred the Civic location over Piedmont Park for a number of reasons. And they list their reasons. After that heavy rain, and that was on Sunday, the march went on. We marched. I was there. I'm part of that committee. And we marched in the rain, in the thunder, and in the lightning. Okay? And one of the things that was observed during that rain at the venue is that the parking lot with the stage and all the vendors was relatively dry. No mud, unlike the park. The inside exhibition hall with air conditioning for the quilt and the vendors was fantastic. For the first time, we were able to put on exhibit the AIDS quilt, which is something we would never have been able to do at the park. Okay, and it was up for the entire 3 days. The Friday night performance inside the Civic Center Auditorium and the Sunday night performance at the Civic Center Auditorium were great. We wish you had done that in prior years. Indoors is wonderful. We like the reverse parade route. The high-powered steel lamps downtown created a safer environment to walk to the car at night, and the only downside was the cost that some of the parking lots charge, especially the hotels. However, I think that's something that could be worked on for future events. The shuttle from Colony Square to the Civic Center was a nice plus. A shuttle was provided, and there was parking provided for the vendors there and for anyone who wanted to come from that place down to the Civic Center. There was a shuttle that would bring them and then take them back at the end of their stay or whatever. There was continuous shuttles going back and forth about every 15 minutes or so. And they said he and his partner preferred the Civic Center location. We also prefer July 4th weekend. If made for a very nice festive weekend, you know. But, I mean, these emails go on and on. I mean, there was like another half dozen that was sent in regarding the same kind of stuff and how great the event turned out. And I read them because it's meaningful. Because beforehand, and I know that a lot of my committee members had received, you know, negative stuff from their friends and people they knew, and they had apprehensions, and, you know, nobody knew how it was going to turn out, but it turned out fantastic. Yeah, fantastic. It was just, we were there, and we were live, you know, and we were proud, and everybody came together to make it happen, and I am so very, very proud of being on such a committee. Okay, so kudos. Kudos to all of you out there listening from the Atlanta Pride Festival Committee. Kudos to you and all that you did.
And kudos to you too, Betty.
Yes, good work, Betty.
My outreach. I mean, if it wasn't for them putting things together, you know, the stages and having things, I mean, there was the other people on that committee that make my stuff possible, because most of my work gets done prior to the event because of the, you know, the outreach to the artists and the performers and meeting with them and scheduling them and the planning of it and talking with the MCs and all that kind of stuff. And we lay it all out, and the proof of the pudding is how it comes together at the event. And it comes together because it's made possible by people like in ops and logistics, you know, and the other, like for the Dyke March, where the other chairs come out to participate in it and help me do that. You know, so it's kudos to all.
Well, I wasn't able to make it down to the Civic Center this year, but I know when I was watching on the news, it was covered a lot in the news this year.
Yes, it was.
And most of the people that I saw, they had very positive things to say about it. And I think, too, the fact that it was held on the 4th of July weekend, I think that may have helped in some aspects, because some of the people that they interviewed were saying that it was the first time that they were able to come to Atlanta Pride because they were here on vacation, and that this Pride was one of the best Prides that they had ever been to. So, you know, again, congratulations to the Atlanta Pride Committee on such a great job. And has there been any conversation about the possibility of holding it there next year?
Well, we don't know yet. You know, that's something that our executive director, Donna Narducci, is in, you know, conversations with the city officials or whatever. We don't know yet.
And I'm sure.
All I can say is that, and because she had said, you know, the last time she was here, that the dates have been reserved for both the park and the Civic Center. So whichever way it goes, we're prepared. It won't be a surprise.
And a shout out to you, Donna. I know that you are probably recuperating from this weekend and probably reveling in the success of it. So congratulations, Donna, and to the rest of the Atlanta Pride Committee on such a great job.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to say thank you on behalf of the Atlanta Pride Festival Committee. I will say thank you to you. And right now, we're going to go into the international and national news and a lot of Pride stuff around the world. Okay, so, and we'll be back with Pride and Politics with Andre.
I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Steve Levin.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the July 5th, 2008. Hundreds of LGBT people and their supporters took to the streets of Calcutta, Bangalore, and New Delhi on June 29th in the largest displays of pride ever held in India. Some marchers in each of the three cities wore rainbow-colored masks to hide their identities, but one participant, openly gay lawyer Alok Gupta, told the Associated Press that this is a national coming-out party. He called the overriding demand of the marchers a simple thing: we are seeking the right to love. Activists have mounted a protracted legal challenge to Section 377 of India's Penal Code, which criminalizes consensual adult same-gender sex as carnal intercourse against the order of nature, punishable by up to 10 years in prison. While it's a rarely enforced remnant of British colonial rule, India's conservative government believes it's representing predominant social attitudes by defending the retention of the law. Opponents charge that it implicitly supports discrimination and is used to bully and extort LGBT people. The country's High Court on July 4th agreed with the NAS Foundation, the non-governmental LGBT and HIV/AIDS advocacy group that's challenging Section 377, to fast-track the case and scheduled a full hearing for July 21st.
LGBT people and their allies also marched with pride in two European cities this week. In the German capital, the parade started for the first time in what was formerly East Berlin, winding its way to the Victory Column in the west of the city. Tens of thousands refused to let occasional showers rain on their parade, and a rose was placed at the recently dedicated monument to LGBT victims of the Nazi regime.
In Paris, popular openly gay mayor Bertrand Delanoy was among a half million people celebrating LGBT pride under a river of rainbow flags. He's been mentioned as a possible Socialist Party candidate for president in 2012, and has stated publicly that he thinks France is ready for an openly gay head of state.
At the annual Pride March in New York City, home of the 1969 Stonewall Riots, which Pride events around the world now commemorate, crowds cheered Governor David Paterson a month after he directed state agencies to provide marriage benefits to same-gender couples who've been legally wed elsewhere. He was the first New York governor to participate in that city's Pride parade.
Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick was also warmly received at the annual Pride Parade in Boston in mid-June, where he marched with his youngest daughter, Catherine, who'd come out as lesbian a few weeks earlier. Tens of thousands also celebrated Pride in mid-June in Indianapolis, Indiana.
The traditional Dykes on Bikes led off the 38th annual Pride Parade in San Francisco on June 29th, but this year, many of them were bridal veils, wedding gowns, and toss bouquets in celebration of the recent California Supreme Court marriage equality ruling, which took effect on June 16th. Thousands of same-gender couples have already married in the state, despite a looming November ballot initiative that would overturn the high court ruling and constitutionally ban them. Arizona's legislature voted this week to put a similar proposal on their state ballot. Voters will also decide on a constitutional same-gender marriage ban this November in Florida.
Members of the Canadian Armed Forces, marching in uniform for the first time, were among about 5,000 participants at Toronto's LGBT Pride Parade on June 29th, before an estimated 1 million spectators. Military personnel also staffed a recruitment booth at the parade's starting point. Canada lifted its ban on military service by open gays and lesbians in 1992.
But LGBT people and their supporters had a difficult time celebrating Pride in three Eastern European cities this week. The Associated Press reported that dozens of protesters attacked the July 5th march in Budapest, pelting participants with eggs, bottles, and rocks, and throwing bricks and Molotov cocktails at police officers who were guarding them. At least 45 protesters were arrested, and two officers were hurt in the melees. Two gay businesses in the Hungarian capital were firebombed earlier in the week in advance of the Pride March. No one was hurt by a gasoline bomb that exploded in the basement of Action, a gay bar, but fumes from the subsequent multiple firebombing of Magnum, a gay sauna, injured at least one. Phone calls to the venues right before each bombing warned people to evacuate, but LGBT activists called them terrorist attacks. Pride parades had been held for several years in Budapest without incident until last year, when ultra-nationalists and skinheads attacked some of the marchers with bottles, smoke bombs, and Molotov cocktails. While police officials had expressed concerns about violence at this year's Pride March, city officials nevertheless issued a permit to a right-wing group to hold a counter-demonstration along the same route. A message on the group's website said, "We will not tolerate foreign perverts of whatever color forcing their alien and sick world onto Hungary."
About 20 people were hurt as a mob of 150 nationalist extremists launched a tear gas attack on the first ever Pride parade in the Czech Republic on June 28th. Two Pride marchers and one police officer in the country's second largest city of Brno required emergency medical treatment. Various reports said that from 3 to 7 anti-queer protesters were arrested. The attack ended the planned two-hour parade after about 20 minutes. The route had already been shortened after protesters threw eggs and fireworks into a crowd of about 500 participants who'd gathered at the starting point of the march. Czech-born lesbian tennis legend Martina Navratilova and the country's human rights minister, Zamila Stelikova, reportedly attended, but were not injured.
Riot police arrested about 60 far-right demonstrators who were protesting Bulgaria's first-ever Pride March in the capital city of Sofia on the same day. One man threw a gasoline bomb near the marchers, numbering about 150 people, while others hurled eggs, rocks, and bottles at them, but no serious injuries were reported. Religious leaders and right-wing groups had demanded that the march be banned. Even socialist Prime Minister Sergei Stanishev said he was uncomfortable with what he called the manifestation and demonstration of such orientations. The far-right Bulgarian National Union had called for open resistance to the march with a week-long campaign featuring posters that read, "Be intolerant, be normal." The group's leader was among those arrested.
In other news, what some critics are calling a church within a church was created at the conclusion this week of the Global Anglican Future Conference, a gathering in Jerusalem of hundreds of bishops, clergy, and laypeople, mostly from the church's African, Latin American, and Asian regions, who oppose LGBT supportive actions taken by the North American branches of the Worldwide Christian Consortium. The new body, called the Fellowship of Confessing Anglicans, will have its own bishops, clergy, theological colleges, and will embrace disaffected Canadian Anglican and U.S. Episcopal congregations who also oppose the queer-inclusive paths their branches have taken, including the consecration in 2003 of openly gay New Hampshire Episcopal Bishop Gene Robinson. While the fellowship, composed of some 300 of Anglicanism's 800 bishops, insists that it wants to remain part of the 80 million member communion, formation of the new group represents a direct challenge to the authority of the church's titular leader, Archbishop of Canterbury Rowan Williams. A statement issued by the breakaway bishops said that, "We do not accept that Anglican identity is determined necessarily through recognition by the Archbishop of Canterbury. Williams, who's unsuccessfully tried to walk a theological tightrope and hold the communion together, criticized the new group, saying that to improvise solutions that may seem to be effective for some in the short term will continue to create more problems than they solve. The impact of the split will likely be evident at the Lambeth Conference, a once-a-decade Anglican policymaking gathering scheduled for later this month in London. Several prominent conservative bishops are boycotting the meeting.
Retired Republican U.S. Senator Jesse Helms of North Carolina, who many believe to have been the most homophobic politician in modern American history, died at the age of 86 this week. He infamously charged that the New York Times and Washington Post are both infested with homosexuals themselves. Just about every person down there is a homosexual or lesbian. Commenting about gays and AIDS, he said that it's their deliberate, disgusting, revolting conduct that is responsible for the disease. Few in the LGBT communities will mourn him, and fewer still will miss him.
The so-called Marriage Protection Amendment, another attempt to define matrimony as exclusively heterosexual in the U.S. Constitution, is being introduced in Congress, a predictable Republican tactic during an election year. Two defenders of heterosexual marriage are among its co-sponsors, U.S. Senators David Vitter of Louisiana, identified last year as a client of a major Washington, D.C. prostitution ring, and Larry Craig of Idaho, who still maintains his heterosexuality after infamously being busted last year for soliciting an undercover policeman in a Minneapolis airport restroom.
And finally, the rabidly homophobic American Family Association distributed a very queer Associated Press story about U.S. Olympic sprinter Tyson Gay on its online One News Now network this week. While the AFA is not identified anywhere on the site as its registered owner, the group always changes the word gay in the so-called news stories it posts to homosexual. Although the Associated Press was credited as the source, the AFA rewrite, which has since been taken down, was headlined, "Homosexual eases into 100 final at Olympic events," and included such gems as Tyson Homosexual was a blur in blue with red and white diagonal stripes across the front, along with matching shoes, all in a tribute to 1936 Olympic star Jesse Owens. And Homosexual qualified for his first Summer Games team and served notice that he's certainly someone to watch in Beijing.
That's News Wrap for the week ending July 5th, 2008, written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Steve Levin.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
All right, in today's episode of Pride in Politics, we're looking at the issues concerning Gerald's house. One side claims that the city council member is trying to close them down, and the council member says that this is an issue of paperwork. Rudy Karn from the National AIDS Education Services for Minorities is with us. Rudy, thank you for joining us.
No problem.
Rudy, before we get into the actual issue of the Gerald's house, can you talk a little bit about what your organization is and what it's been doing for the last few years?
Okay. NESM, which stands for National AIDS Education Services for Minorities, been around since 1990. We started out with just doing education and prevention club outreach, and we evolved from that to five different programs. We have a Department of Health Education and Prevention, which provides counseling, testing, workshops, CRCS, which is a risk reduction program. We do club outreach. We distribute condoms, and we do mental health also under DHEP. We also have a young African-American MSM drop-in center, which we open to participants 18 to 25. Also, we have a client service department, which we provide client services and housing. Housing also. Gerald's house is one of the houses. We just purchased a new house in southwest Atlanta that we're going to house young African-American MSMs, regardless of their HIV status. We have a clothing closet. We have a food pantry. We provide emergency financial assistance and also transportation assistance. On our national side, we have a national program that provides capacity building assistance and technical assistance to other agencies around the country related to African Americans and HIV prevention.
And as a part of your growth that you've been mentioning, the center has been providing services in the form of housing and other support services for people that are affected and infected with HIV and AIDS. Is that correct?
Correctly. The house opened in November. I'm not sure what month it was, but the house opened in 1994, and we have been providing housing since 1994. We stopped last year due to renovations and the city citing us for being in code violations, and that's why the house was temporarily suspended because of that, because the city of Atlanta Grants Management Office sent someone out to do an inspection on the property, and they noted several code violations, so we had to get those repaired or corrected before we could actually open the housing program up again, which it has been reopened.
And so this is Gerald's house?
Correct.
And it's named after?
One of our founding board members, Gerald Anthony Ludd, was a member from California. Gerald been on the board since probably we founded in 91. Gerald came on the board. Very avid supporter of the agency, loaned the agency's own personal money, was always there to help me in the initial period. He transitioned in 1996.
Okay. And are there people currently living in the house?
Yes, we do have a resident currently in the house, and we actually go through an application process, and we have several applications now that we're reviewing for admission to Gerald's house.
Okay, and so what is at issue?
You know, honey, you said when you started that Councilman Carla Smith said it's a paperwork issue. I don't quite understand what that means. According to what I read in the hearing scheduled for Thursday, is they're starting procedures to suspend or revoke the special use permit. And, you know, that I guess I give you a little bit of history. And what they're saying is that we didn't operate the facility as we intended, or we didn't use the facility as the special use permit told us to use it. And what I say to that is because the reason it was not used since last year is because the city of Atlanta said we were in code violations and we couldn't help anybody there. So what we did, instead of just leaving the house empty, because we actually discovered that vagrants were sleeping on the porch, the front porch and the back porch. So what we decided to do is operate the drop-in center out of the house until we completed the renovations. It was never intent for the drop-in center to be permanently housed at Gerald's house. That was just a temporary situation to have the house occupied so people wouldn't vandalize it.
And so you're saying that the house is currently in operation, but is there a time when the house is going to close?
No, the house will not close. The thing about it, which, and I'm not sure whether the councilwoman knows it, we can operate Gerald's house without a special use permit. That's not required because of how the house is zoned. The only reason we need the special use permit, and this is my assumption now, the only reason we need the special use permit is to obtain funds from the City of Atlanta Grants Management Office. The city administers the HUD money, which comes down from HUD. It's called Housing with Opportunity with People with AIDS. They administer that money. And in order for us to apply, we did apply for the money this last round. In order for us to get that money, it has to be zoned a special use permit. So what they're trying to do is, in essence, they don't want to fund us. We've had issues with the City of Atlanta Grants Management Office since 2003, and they really don't want to fund us. And they've actually put all kind of obstacles in our way to not get funded. You know, one of the obstacles they did last year, they say, well, we don't want to invest the money into doing the renovations to bring it up to code because it's too expensive. So we did that. We got the renovations done, okay? They sent somebody back out to inspect the property, of course, to pass code. So now this is their next ploy not to fund us by revoking the permit.
Okay. I'm sorry to interrupt. We did try to reach out to Councilwoman Carla Smith's office. She did send the following statement, and I will read it. It says, in 1994, AIDS Education Services for Minorities was granted a special use permit for 503 Boulevard with the condition of the special use permit stating, quote, if the applicant AESM ceases to operate the facility, the special use permit granted would expire.
Right.
An application made to the COA Grants Management Department indicated that operations have ceased at the facility since March of 2006 due to the failure to meet the conditions of continuous operation of AESM. The special use has expired. The COA has a process that requires all land use and zoning matters to go before the neighborhood associations, neighborhood planning units, and hearings, and this has followed the process. This statement is simply the facts. There is no conspiracy and no drama. I have always and will continue to support HIV/AIDS education for all citizens. And that's from Councilwoman Carla Smith. Rudy, what is your response to that?
The thing about cease to exist, how can you cease to exist if you told us that we're in violation of codes? So we can't operate a property if you, the city, said we're in violation of code, of housing code. So how can you operate a program if you said we're in violation? So my thing is, you know, one of the things that disappointed me, instead of them contacting me or asking me whether the facility was in use or not, they just decided to go through this process. Nobody ever contacted me. Nobody ever called me. They just assumed that the program had ceased.
Got you. And so as you're trying to resolve this, what steps is being taken to, is there a kind of a grievance procedure, and what does that grievance procedure look like?
I have no idea. We've actually hired an attorney. And the attorney says that normally when that process happens, they give you an opportunity to correct the problem if you are in violation of the special use permit. I got no letter. The first letter I got was saying there was a hearing to revoke it. As I say again, nobody called me. Nobody asked whether whether clients was in the house. Nobody ever said anything to me. All I did was get the letter in the mail saying that there's a hearing on Thursday to revoke the special use permit.
Well, Rudy, is there anything more you would like to add?
Well, you know, Councilman Smith said there's no conspiracy, but she's been trying to close that house since she's been in office. You know, because we went before the city council last year to get funding, and she came up at the tail end of the meeting and said, well, y'all have been problems since you've been in the neighborhood. We've gotten complaints for you all. And I specifically had requested a list of crimes, the reports from 503 Boulevard from the city of Atlanta, and we got that, and there were none. There were a few complaints in the early days, which we did, and we corrected that. That was over 5 or 6 years ago. So, you know, I don't know what to say about Councilman. She said she's been in support of HIV and AIDS. I haven't seen it. She's not been in support of us.
Well, we'll definitely.
She may be supporting something else, but it's not an ESM.
Well, we thank you so much, Rudy. How can people get in touch with your organization?
Area code 404-691-8880. And I thank you for hearing this. I appreciate it. I wish somebody would have been off my office, but I didn't anticipate they were going to call in.
Okay, well, we thank you, and we'll definitely be keeping our listeners informed, and we hope to have you back to bring us up to speed as developments happen.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
This year, WRFG will be 35 years old. To mark these 35 years of continuous broadcasting, we will be hosting a series of celebrations throughout the year. The festivities begin with a fun-filled birthday block party on Saturday, July 26th from 11 a.m. until 6 p.m. on the grounds of the Little Five Points Community Center located at 1083 Austin Avenue Northeast. The event will be filled with live music performances, dancing, food, jugglers, face painters, a poetry contest, children's activities, vendors, and much more. It's a free, family-friendly event, so come join the party and wish WRFG a happy 35th birthday.
We go celebrate and have a good time. It's time to come together.
Okay, and welcome back. And this is WRFG Atlanta, your station for progressive information. And you are listening to Alternative Perspectives, the voice of the GLBTQI community and our allies. And in the house we have Amani Evans from Women Healing Women. And she has a peace revolution coming up. Okay. After Pride this weekend. and doing our thing out there. Armani was one of the MCs for the Rock Rhythm and Rhyme, and it was awesome.
Awesome is an understatement.
Okay. All righty. Tell us about Women Healing Women and the peace revolution that's about to hit Atlanta.
Yes, I'm very excited about it. First, Women Healing Women, we are a nonprofit organization that was founded in 2004 to dedicate it to supporting the healing and recovery of women survivors of sexual domestic violence. And so we do a lot of support groups, empowerment programming. But what's really exciting is that this year we are launching a year-long awareness campaign called the Peace Revolution that I am extremely excited about. And our kickoff event for the Peace Revolution will be this Sunday. However, what I want to say about the Peace Revolution is that, you know, because when I put the two words together, peace and revolution, is almost an oxymoron for a lot of people. But what we want to do is, the goal of the Peace Revolution is twofold. One, it is a fundraising effort for Women Healing Women to expand our services. But also, the goal is a revolution, a changing of the way we think about peace. A changing about the way we think about connecting with one another and overcoming the barriers that keep us separate. This must end. And for me, it began, honestly, Betty, when I saw the verdict from the R. Kelly verdict.
Mm-hmm.
I thought to myself, something has to change. And then my second thought was, it's more about changing. It's about, we have to shift. It has to be a paradigm shift.
Okay, could you tell us about the verdict first, so that people understand in case they don't know about that?
Well,
verdict?
Pretty much it's simple.
Okay.
He was found not guilty.
Okay. And he did?
And he was accused of sexually assaulting underage girls in some pretty vile, demeaning ways. And he has gone on since that original, since the original case was filed against him. He has gone on to make more money than he did prior to that. Mm. So clearly, we're sending a message that you can assault children. You can, and aside from assaulting, you can degrade women. And we're still going to, and as long as the beat is popping, we're going to still buy your music. And we're not holding people accountable for this. And it's so widespread. I mean, you know, by the age of 18, one in three women experience sexual assault in one form or another. I mean, these are, one in three is just, it's unacceptable.
Mm.
These are unacceptable statistics. So my first thought when I heard the verdict was, something has to change. My second thought was, I have to be the change that I am seeking. And so what can I do? Through Women Healing Women, what can I do? And immediately the peace revolution came to my mind. So our goal is not just to outreach and educate people about the effects of violence, because everyone pays.
Mm-hmm.
Not just women, but the entire community, the global community, is affected when women are violated, when children are violated. The whole community is affected, and we lose something. When a man violates a woman, he's affected. You know, there is a change in him. And so we don't want to just educate people about statistics and numbers and this is what happened. We've taken on a big goal with Peace Revolution. We want to profoundly impact the prolific culture of violence. We want to impact it. We want to change it. And then we want to go one step further, is we want to inspire people to really think about how we can extend a movement of peace to everyone we see. You know, there's a saying that, you know, if anybody's ever received an email from me, you know, at the end I say namaste. And namaste means that the God in me beholds the God in you. And for me, that's a very sacred thing. That's at the foundation of the peace revolution. Because that means that I recognize that you, whether you're black, white, gay, straight, transgender, that you are an extension of me. And if we can really embody that, ooh, baby, the kind of things we can do in the world.
Oh, yes, indeed. The kind of things that we can do when we get together and agree on something.
Absolutely.
You know? Yes, you know, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Imani, I just love you.
I love you right back.
I just love you.
And the love.
I get all that love. Ooh, and the love is spreading here.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
The gay happy people are spreading the love.
For anybody who knows Imani, who has just been in her presence, you know that this sister just oozes peace and love. And I just love you, but I've got so many questions for you regarding this peace revolution that you are embarking upon. But I guess one of the first questions that I want to ask is, you know, change is hard for everybody.
Yes.
And with regards to peace, I guess, how do you get people who may not necessarily have peace within themselves to buy into the peace revolution?
Mm-hmm. I think that we first begin, that's a great question, because I think that that's a question that a lot of people will have on their minds. But I think that the way we begin doing that is really very tangibly showing people how not the cost of not having it.
Sure.
You know, it's sort of like, have you ever seen one of those computer-generated programs where they show you aging?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wish somebody had shown me one. That's a whole other program. But outside of that, if we can sort of, take people into the future of what a future looks like if we don't begin to make these changes in a profound way, that the cost to us as individuals. And I think we start there. Mm-hmm. Then one of the other things I think is that people, the only reason why it's challenging is because it's different. Mm-hmm. And so if we can show people a practical way to begin making changes. Right. So one of the things that we plan to do on Sunday is actually hand out a piece of paper says, here's how we start.
Okay.
And so some of the things are as simple as create an awareness about your language, the language that we use to one another.
Right.
You know, how we greet one another, the how we describe, you know, you ever hear things that demean, that are ways of demeaning men by using their expression of femininity, like you throw ball like a girl. What does that mean? Because I know some girls that can throw some serious balls.
Ball,
So I think that, you know, creating an awareness around just the language of the oppressive language that we use. There was a quote by a California senator in 1993 that said, this is a senator, real life, who was quoted saying, if you can't rape your wife, then, I mean, who can you rape?
Oh, my.
Wow. Okay, so
these are the people who are making our laws, huh?
These are the people who are making the laws.
Ooh,
and,
Lord.
You know, and so that was 1993. And in 1997, Justice Donald Roberts of Franklin County in New York, our old stomping grounds, says, every woman needs a good pounding now and then. So this language is still okay. That was as recent as 1997, and I could go on and on, but I think the point is beginning to create an awareness around language that is oppressive.
And that's a very good point, because a lot of times people think that the abuse really starts with when you are getting pounded on.
Absolutely.
Or even when it comes to sexual abuse, the actual act of being violated in some way, when the abuse actually starts long before that.
And
a lot of times people don't, first they don't understand that concept, and then they don't know what signs to look for.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
About the signs to look for?
Yes.
Well, I think that, you know, there's one of my favorite quotes by Emily Dickinson is, you know, some say the word has just has life when it's spoken, is dead after it is spoken. And she says, I believe it is then that it just has, that it begins life. And I think that that's the, these are the kinds of things, that's why that is a very easy thing to begin taking, a, having an awareness about is, and I'm not even suggesting substitute words for this. I believe that in the core of us, we have a knowingness about rightness. You know, when we hear right. truth, it resonates for us. And so if you just shifting our awareness about something mm-hmm. changes how we are reacting. One of the signs, I think, is they're subtle. You're absolutely right. It doesn't begin with a hit. It starts long before that, and it continues long after that.
Right.
You know, it is the subtle controlling, thinking that jealousy is a sign of love. Mm. And, you know, it's controlling who you talk to, what you do, those kind of subtle things, what you wear. You know, they met you wearing a short skirt. Now, all of a sudden, you have to wear a robe.
Right.
A long robe, and those kinds of things start very subtle. And then this is the part that really, one of the things is really important for women to focus on self-empowerment is because one of the things that, one of the ways that abuse starts is people who are abusive are master manipulators, they're masters at finding our weak spots.
Right.
And so if I'm self-conscious about this and I don't recognize my full power in this particular area, that's exactly the area that they start to attack. Mm-hmm. And then that attack begins to spread. Mm-hmm. And they find that in, that crack in the wall.
And even with children, children who are molested or who are raped or are sexually assaulted in some form or fashion, the signs for them, you know, the signs are just that much more murky.
Yes.
Because a lot of times with these predators, and I'm thinking about this because of the R. Kelly verdict.
Right.
A lot of times with the predators, they're thinking about the abuse starts with thought.
Absolutely.
And then they do things to befriend mm-hmm. children. For instance, I know that in part of the testimony I heard, he was given money to some of the young women who
yes.
he was accused of assaulting, and he got close to their families, and the,
mm-hmm.
the families were close to him, and they just thought that he was this great person because he was giving them money and things of that nature.
And the only part I disagree is I don't think they thought he was a great person. They were stuck on the materialism and the society of capitalism that says he with more is more, you know, and that's part of why the peace revolution is important, because it's about shifting from that,
mm-hmm.
the value of people based on things and how much they have. Because
right.
I'm certain that if these parents really, you know, did not have that and were able to really take a look at him and his behavior, mm-hmm. you know, because if him on the stage is the best of him, mm-hmm. then you cannot tell me that outside of that, that it fell far from that.
Right.
And so, you know, yes, you know, they started giving him money and doing things, nice things, taking him places they've never been, but not really looking at not really truly seeing the person, the characteristics of the person. And I think that, you know, a lot of times for younger people, we see things like isolation,
right?
Promiscuity, mm-hmm. which actually seems like it might not, it would go the other way, but often, you know, when children are introduced to sexuality before their psychological and emotional maturity, then that's how they learn how to relate to the world.
Mm-hmm. You know, you deal a lot with women who have been abused either physically or mentally or even sexually. And I guess another one of my questions is, within our community, within our Black community,
yes,
we don't talk about sex mm-hmm. that much unless it's in some sort of vile way. Why do you
right.
think that is?
I think it's a fear, and it's sort of one of those old habits that have come down through one of those, you know, like Dr. Wessling talks about those Dr. Akbar talks about the psychological chains and images of slavery. It's one of those things, those got carried down all the way down into our psyche now, because I really believe it's, you know, a taboo subject because of the way we were socialized from slavery on. Because I think that if we were in our, you know, before the slave trade, we look at, you know, our natural state as African Americans in Africa, you know, that sexuality is not a taboo subject. So we have to look at the sort of the rape of that that began as our, you know, coming over here as part of the oppression that we endure. And it's one of those things that we've carried and we no longer have to carry. And I think that, you know, because all of who we were had to be, you know, taboo. We could not be fully expressive as human beings. Mm-hmm. And sexuality is a part of our humanness.
Right.
So I think that that's one of those things that get carried all the way down, that it's time for us to let go. It's no more can we blame anyone anymore. I mean, we're really acting like Pavlov's dog now. You know, the bell is ringing and we're just going out there. And really there's no, you know, there's nothing keeping us from being better.
Well, I want to move back to the Peace Revolution. Now, this Sunday.
Yes.
Tell our listeners what's happening this Sunday.
Well, it's very exciting. The Peace Revolution is kicking off the campaign with an event called Performers for Peace. It's going to be held at the Midtown Tavern at 554 Piedmont Road, and it's open to everyone. I would love to be able to look out in the audience and see just a diverse of younger, older, black, white, Latino, Asian. You know, I mean, that would be my goal. And there are a lot of spoken word artists who will be giving us a message, a change message, a message of nonviolence, and a message of consciousness elevation. And so we're really looking forward to that. We'll also have a couple of survivors there talking about the need to change. The event is from 5 to 7:30, and you can contact me to find out more about it. We're also looking for people who are willing to volunteer with us that evening, and I can be contacted at 404-944-6409. And unless Oprah's calling, then I'll give you my personal number. Call me Oprah.
This is not just for lesbian women. This is also inclusive for straight women.
Right. It's inclusive for all women. Our program services are
right.
For all women.
Okay.
Now, Women Healing Women is very unique among the anti-violence movement organizations that do nonviolence work with women because of who I am as an out lesbian. We serve more lesbians than any other organization around. And a lot of those organizations look to us as to how to bridge the gap in services for those women. Mm-hmm. But the event is open to everyone. Our services are open to everyone.
Cool beans. And performing on Sunday will be?
Performing on Sunday will be Miss Meek, who is a dynamic, beautiful woman who is very conscious, and her work is dynamic. You will not be disappointed. Lakara, who we all know and love from WRFG. Lakara Foster, who I just adore, that sister, you know. Lakara will be performing. Phoenix YZ. Really, this is like a stage performance that we have.
We just
added Teresa Davis to the show. So we have a younger sister, Jasmine Harden, coming to the show.
Oh, wow.
One of my best, dearest friends, but an amazing sister, Nana Ajayi-Anan of Dance to a Different Drum.
Oh,
dancer.
Wow.
I mean, it's just going to be power. I don't know if we're going to be able to stand that much power on. We might blow the system up, so just come be prepared.
That's a lot of woman power there.
That's a lot of woman power.
A lot
there.
Of woman
you will
power.
Not be disappointed. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's going to be very dynamic. I might drop a line or two.
Okay. That's so cool. did you talk about how you started and why you started Women Healing Women?
Well, I started the organization because as a survivor myself, a survivor of sexual violence and a long-term survivor, I'm a survivor of childhood sexual abuse. And then as an adult, I was sexually assaulted. So I really was seeking to go to an organization where I could go and talk about the long-term effects, because that's the other thing about Women Healing Women. We don't do crisis work. We do the survive, because there was a gap. There is a gap in services out there for women. There's a lot of crisis mm-hmm. centers. But what about 5 years later,
right.
10 years later? And if we think about 61% of us reported assaults don't actually file, right? So they don't actually carry through any kind of legal thing. But then 10 years later, they're wondering, man, I'm really not having good relationships. I wonder why, you know, and these are the long-term effects of violence. And I couldn't find anywhere that was talking about that kind of healing and recovery. So, like most things, and because I want to be like Betty when I grow up, I said, I can't find it, I'll start it.
There you go. Okay, I'll start it.
I'll start it. Betty did it.
You guys are so funny. You make me blush.
Yes. but that's the reason I started it, and we've been going strong and growing and serving women, so it's very exciting for us.
So this is a year long
campaign. Okay. And so there are other elements just beside the peace revolution. We will also be doing something we're calling Peace Out, and those will be community forums for folks to come out and learn more about how we can be the change that we're seeking.
So how often are you planning to have events throughout the year?
Every month we will be doing something, and that's a great question, because you can go to our website at www.surviving2thriving.org and sign up, scroll down, and join our mailing list so that you can learn more about everything. You can be involved in the things that we're doing. One of the things that's really big for us is we want to do this as a collaborative effort with other organizations. So if there are other organizations listening who would like to be a part of some of the projects, either the Peace Out Talk Forums, the Performances for Peace that we'll be doing, please call me and let's figure out how we can do this together, you know. We have to do it together.
I want to thank you, Amani, for taking the time to come down here and telling us about your event, your organization.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Your work. It's great stuff.
Yes, thank you.
And I thank you for it.
Thank you.
And you've been listening to Alternative Perspectives on WRFG 89.3, your station for progressive information. And next week is Tea Talk Tuesday. And we are going to have a guest calling in from Australia. And they are the edit team for Trans People in Love. And Trans People in Love is an illuminating resource for members of the trans community and their partners and families, gay, lesbian, bisexual, queer, and intersex people, sexologists, sex therapists, counselors, psychologists, psychotherapists, social workers, psychiatrists, medical doctors, educators, students, and couples and family therapists. Okay, the Trans People in Love provides a forum for the experience of being in love and in a relationship with significant others for members of the trans community. Please tune in and hear all about that, okay, and the transgender community in love, okay. And Reed Vandenberg will also be joining us from Oregon, and he is a trans therapist, so it should be an interesting conversation. And from our local trans community, Monica Helms will be here in the studio with us. So it should be a very, very, very educational talk, okay? And until then, we will say good night and buenas noches.
y besando.